It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What's the one thing all great teams have in common?
Great coaching.
Try to suck up to me, Eggman.
I'm Gordon Bombay, the new hockey coach.
All right, let's go! Learn me! Come on!
We're Team USA, gathered from all across America. And we're going to stick together. You know why?
Because we are ducks. And ducks fly together.
It's the Quack Attack Podcast.
Hey, everybody. What about the things you said? You said we didn't deserve to live. I'm Mike. That's Tommy.
What's up, everyone?
That's Kevin.
What's up, y'all?
On the phone, but that's okay. He's got work to do, so we'll let it slide this time. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling all your friends. June was a pretty good month for us. We're keeping steady here. We're trying to increase a little bit, so keep telling your friends. And let's just kind of get into it here. Tommy, what is our topic today?
So this topic is kind of revisiting a topic we did a few months ago. Not really a topic, more of like a theme, which is the Mighty Ducks Minute. And I'll let Mike kind of explain the origin of that.
Yeah, so we started in episode 82. Basically, we ripped off the Star Wars Minute idea. So a Star Wars Minute podcast, they break down a minute of the Star Wars. I was going to say trilogy, but I don't know how many there are now. But
I believe there are seven.
The series, the Star Wars series. So they break it down minute by minute. We decided to do that for the Mighty Ducks. The only kind of twist we have is we are not going in order. So they go in order for everyone and, you know, whatever. Us, we just do it random. I love random number generators. You can listen to more about that in episode 82, our first one. So randomly number generated this time. The last one was 284. This time we're doing episode 65.
Not episode 65. Minute 65.
Minute 65. I don't know why I said episode. We're way ahead.
Because you're drunk.
Maybe. I might be. Who knows? They can't see me.
Don't go driving around with an open container.
I won't. Scary place out there. So, minute 65, which not a lot of conversion you have to do here. Hour and 5 minutes into the first Mighty Ducks. And to set it up a little bit, they are all in detention. Bombay has just walked in. And let's just listen to the full minute here.
I want to be your coach again.
You coach a bunch of losers?
No, I want to coach the Ducks.
What about the things you said? You said we didn't deserve to live.
Carb, I was being sarcastic. You know what that means?
No.
Okay, then you do. I didn't mean those things the way they sounded. You guys know what it's like to be misunderstood, right?
Yeah, of course. We're kids.
So, can you forgive me? Can I be your coach again?
What about Banks?
He could be on the team if he wants. He should have been with us all year. It's you guys who were cheated. But let's forget all that crap. We're a team, right?
Yeah.
I made you guys, and I'm sticking with you. So, what's it gonna be? We can play tomorrow night, still have a shot at the playoffs, or we can forfeit again, and the season's over. Peter, what do you say?
Peter, what do you say? And that's how it ends. A little bit of a cliffhanger minute here. Initial impressions, Tommy.
I think we hit another jackpot on our random number generator because this is a good minute.
Yeah, that's a great minute.
And it's at the beginning too. It doesn't just like cut right in. So I think Steve Brill, whatever, when he was writing this, he probably anticipated us breaking it down minute by minute one day. Mm-hmm. So I'd be interested to go back and see like if every minute kind of starts something new.
Kevin, response, additional thoughts, anything you got here?
Well, I think we should have Stephen Brill on every time we do a minute podcast so that he can give his two cents. But that's a whole nother topic, and we'll leave that to Mike. But it's obviously a very strong scene. Coach Bombay is spitting some hot fire. He's doing some serious teaching. He's really growing this team, and as a person, really.
Mm-hmm. So we start off, Bombay is in the room, and then Averman comes in with his, like, "Do you want to coach a bunch of losers?" Now, is that a sarcastic move, or is that actually a question for Averman?
See, that's interesting. It was definitely sarcastic, because Averman, if anyone understands sarcasm on the Ducks, it's Averman. And, like, the tone is just like, "Oh, you want to coach a bunch of losers?" Like, I think that's definitely sarcastic, which then makes his, like, "Do you know what sarcasm is?" Maybe he was just asking that to Karp, because we all know how stupid Karp is.
Yeah, no one laughs when Karp does his, like, "No." They don't even react. So I feel like, yeah, everyone kind of knows what's going on except for Karp, as usual. Now, going with Karp and his scene here, he's standing in front of kind of my favorite sign in the whole room, which is, "Our class loves to read, read, read," which... great, I think just a great addition to any classroom, really. I like the presidents on the wall.
Yeah, I was gonna say the classroom kind of has a stereotypical classroom feel, where it has all the presidents on, like, outlining the wall. It's got, you know, like the chalkboards all around with, like, the, you know, "We love to read," you know, posters like that.
Yeah, just how do we feel about Bombay's overall speech there, Kevin?
I mean, like I said, it was a pretty strong speech. He's recovering from a kind of a tricky situation. So he was pretty quick on his feet. You could really see his lawyer coming out there. So I think he did a really good job convincing them that he was being genuine, and they bought it pretty quickly too. I think that's pretty obvious.
Real quick before we get too far into that, do you think maybe Bombay was saying like, "Do you know what sarcasm means?" And then Karp says, "You know, no." Maybe he legitimately didn't know, and, like, he was just being really weird because we know how odd he is. And he'd gotten hit in the head, you know, a couple weeks earlier, so maybe that's, like, residual effect, because they obviously know what sarcasm is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or he was just trying to be mean, or, like, just to Bombay, and he accidentally hit on it. I like that. That would kind of explain Averman's sarcasm at the beginning, and then everyone, you know, not reacting to Karp there. So I like that. Bombay here, it kind of, like, doesn't make sense, though, because, like, Bombay, he talks and, you know, "Oh, we're misunderstanding." He's like, "Do you forgive me? Can I be your coach again?" And then Gee asks, "What about Banks?" And then Bombay's just basically like, "He can play if he wants to, but forget all that crap." Like, he doesn't come to a conclusion there. Or am I mistaken here? Was that a legitimate explanation to Gee's question?
Well,
you're talking specifically about Banks.
Well, he says, like, he can play if he wants to. It's kind of like, don't think about Banks. Like, this is not about Banks. This is about, like, you and me. And, like, you can't think about, you know, he's just like, you know, "You were the ones who were cheated, but forget about that." Okay. Like, you can't dwell on the past, is kind of what he's getting at.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think there's more than a hint of reverse psychology in there. To kind of be like, "I don't really care about Banks," and then so that they'll start to think that maybe it would be okay if he's a Duck, that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, because if he said we need him,
he kind of snuck that in there. Yeah, you know, they wouldn't trust him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I thought was an interesting line, though, and you may be going with this, is, like, his next thing he says, like, "I made you, and I'm gonna stick with you." It's just like, "I made you." It's just like, what? It's almost like, I mean, he did. But when he says that, like, he says it kind of like looking at Charlie, and Charlie, you know, gives him a smile, but Goldberg is right next to him, and Goldberg visibly rolls his eyes.
I did not notice the Goldberg there.
Yeah, and so I don't know if it was, like, just Sean Weiss doing one of his patented, "Hey, I was an asshole kid," and they thought that was good, or if that was, you know, Goldberg, you know, just being Goldberg, or if there was, like, a cheeseburger on the ceiling that he was looking at.
Yeah, yeah, that was my next point, was that quote right there. He kind of is taking credit for this kind of, I guess they haven't really made a huge turnaround yet, but they are turning around. He's kind of taking all the credit for that. How much of that is Bombay, and how much do you think he's kind of overplaying the role there?
Hang on, wait, before we get too deep into that, I'm kind of cheating here, and I'm watching it on silent right now.
Mm-hmm.
Simultaneously, while Goldberg rolls his eyes, Charlie like falls in love with him. So it's pretty hilarious. Go back and watch it.
Okay. Yeah, so how much does Bombay, I guess, deserve all this credit he's giving to himself versus how much is it, you know, overselling what he did with these kids?
I think the kids maybe originally thought that, you know, we don't need him, but they're probably just like, wait, actually, yes, we do. We were terrible. Like, we were god-awful.
Why?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously think he deserves the praise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, without him, they're still shitty District 5.
Mm-hmm. Some stupid number.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I could throw the theory out there that another coach who came in a similar situation could have turned that team around. Is that a fair thing to say, or did they need exactly Bombay?
Well, you could also say, like, he made the Ducks as well, like, in terms of...
Yeah.
He got rid of District 5. He got the sponsorship, you know, whatever. He convinced them to be Ducks. And so he did make them. And, like, you can... Even apart from, like, the hockey skills thing. I mean, you could bring in, like, a Coach O'Ryan or whatever, or, you know, Coach Riley. And, yeah, they could probably teach him a little bit more about hockey, but could they have kind of built the Ducks in that image? I don't think so.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. With all that, if you heard that, if you were a kid and you heard that saying, what would be your reaction there?
I don't know. I think the whole "I made you" is weird.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was an odd choice of words there. I don't know. I don't know that as a kid. I don't know, how old are they here? It's like 12.
Yeah,
11,
around
11
there.
To, yeah. I see. I don't know. Some of them probably pick up on it and think, you know, what the hell. But I don't know. I think a lot of that might kind of go over their heads.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some of them definitely pick up on it and kind of resent him for it.
Okay. I also think maybe this is, he's always been the father figure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd imagine some of these kids don't really have their fathers in their lives. We know Charlie does not.
Yes.
And so this whole, I made you and I'm sticking with you, that speaks to Charlie for sure. You know, Kevin mentions that he falls right in love with Bombay right there because Charlie is used to guys running out on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so was he speaking more to Charlie or more to like the guys or the players who their dad isn't really in their life or something like that? So maybe that's actually much deeper because, I mean, the dad is like, oh, I made you, whatever. Or like a traditional parent thing is like, oh, I made you. I brought you into this world. I can take you right out of it. So something like that. So maybe he is kind of playing on the father figure, you know, I made you and I'm sticking with you. I'm not running out on you.
Maybe Bombay minored in psychology in college and is playing some mind games with these kids.
Well, he's a good trial lawyer, yeah. So he's got to be able to play mind games.
Yeah. That is a good point. Now, was that line intended, as you said, for all the kids without fathers? Or was that like a subtle kind of, I don't want to say like dig, but subtle nod towards specifically Charlie?
I think specifically Charlie, but I think we've established that Peter probably comes from a broken home. And so maybe that was, and Peter was kind of like a ringleader for one of these, for like the mutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, every guy who's ever been Peter's life has probably also like run out on him, and you can't blame him. Have you met Peter? But.
Which I kind of goes to my next point. Why go to Peter at the end there? And why not like a Conway or a Fulton or Jesse or someone or even Guy who seems skeptical when he is asking like, what about Banks? Why go to Peter there in that moment?
I think
I don't know. Maybe I think Bombay sensed something. I don't know. I definitely think that it was intentional. And maybe he did because if you watch it, Peter does look very like down on himself, like down in the dumps. So maybe Bombay senses a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. So he senses Peter kind of turning around, changing his mind more towards joining up with Bombay again?
No, it's kind of, if you watch it, like, Peter kind of looks like he's very down in the dumps.
Yeah.
Kind of, so Bombay is kind of targeting that at him, kind of, you know, reassuring him that he's there.
Oh, okay.
So I think maybe that had something to do with it.
I think that's a good point, but I also think it plays into the whole Peter leading the mutiny. Mm-hmm. And we've also talked about, like, who's leaders on this team in previous episodes. And, like, when they first introduced the Ducks, like, they're real hesitant. And, like, Carp, like, looks to Peter for, like, guidance.
Yeah.
And so I think Peter or Jesse are the ones you have to go to. You can't go to Charlie because Charlie, of course, is going to say yes. And you can get the whole eye rolls or whatever. And Carp might go, oh, he just likes his mom. You can't go to Fulton because Fulton, we know, is immensely loyal and, you know, a similar thing. I think they all respect Fulton, but I don't know if you get the whole team. I think Jesse or Peter you go to. And I think maybe because Peter, maybe that first line about, you know, I'm sticking with you, maybe that resonates with Peter because Peter was just like, he says, we're losers, and didn't deserve to be born. So maybe he heard that from his dad, like, before he ran out on him. And we all know that Jesse has a very loving father. And so maybe he's like, Jesse's probably going to say yes, but Peter's definitely.
Okay.
And one other thing I noticed, some good imagery, is Peter has, like, a star on his vest.
Yeah.
Like, looks like a sheriff's badge. And so it's almost like you convince the sheriff and the rest of the deputies are going to, you know, join along.
Uh-huh.
So take a look at that.
Oh, yeah.
So you're saying it was, like, a conscious move to go to Peter for all those reasons. It was not just, like, an accident that Bombay just, like, turned and looked.
That was no accident. I can imagine him rehearsing that the night before, like, a trial, like, a lawyer does, like, his opening and ending statement or whatever, rehearsing it so he knows exactly who he's looking at in the jury, at what point, you know, which facial expressions to use, which hand gestures. And so he knew exactly what he was doing. And as soon as, like, he probably sees Charlie give that smile, he knows, I've got this room or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Now, Conway, Fulton, Jesse, we talked about them as kind of leaders, as you explained why Bombay did not go to them, but they're conspicuously kind of absent from this whole scene that's about, you know, getting the team together, getting everybody kind of back on the same page. So you have your leaders, and the people that talk are Averman, Carp, Gee, and Peter. So what is kind of behind Conway, Fulton, Jesse kind of standing in the background and letting these kind of supporting guys speak for the rest of the team?
I think maybe it has a little bit to do with them recognizing that they aren't going to be able to convince these guys. I mean, that might be giving them a little bit too much credit, but, you know, they realize they're not going to be able to talk Peter into, you know, accepting Bombay and Banks, et cetera. So they kind of have to let it run its course and let them kind of find their way naturally. That might be giving them way too much credit, but that could certainly be a scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be interesting if a guy like Jesse said, what about Banks? Because, I mean, he was kind of the first one to be very anti-Banks. You know, when Banks walks in the locker room in the beginning, Conway goes, you know, on behalf of the Ducks, I'd like to say welcome. And Jesse stops him, looks Banks up and down, says, cake eater. And so it'd be interesting, like, why Jesse didn't ask. Maybe he was just kind of, like, so pissed off still that he didn't want to, like, he was just, like, kind of steaming and he didn't really know what to say. But I don't know. It's interesting.
All right. One thing I did forget to mention is, if you look at the blackboard, Peter Mark has terrible handwriting.
Oh, yeah. He's, like, the only one who's not writing in cursive.
Yeah.
I did kind of want to, do you think it's actually their handwriting? Like, do you think they actually had all the actors sit there and write all those out?
I bet
they
did.
Do you think somebody out, like, on staff or something did that previously and then they just, like, set up for the scene?
That is a good question. I don't know. Like, I feel like they got some, like, randoms to write a lot of them, but then the actors came in and they wrote, like, a few lines.
Well, think about, like, the scene right before. I know we're not really supposed to be talking about, but the scene right before is, like, kind of they're like, I will not quack at the principal, whatever. And they're writing stuff. So I imagine them doing, like, just filming, you know, 15 minutes of that, what they're talking, just so they could edit it together. So I think they're really, that is their real handwriting. Mm. And I imagine the, yeah. maybe the kid who plays Peter is just so terrible. His cursive was like, okay, Peter, we got to stop this. Like,
I mean, in all fairness, his handwriting looks a lot like my handwriting. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like mine too, but still. When you have Tammy Duncan over there writing big, looping, cursive letters, it doesn't look good for you.
Very intimidating from Tammy.
Yeah.
I will say I've spent a better part of our talk today very closely inspecting the blackboard just to see if anybody snuck anything in there.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I haven't found anything, but I would be shocked if somebody didn't try to sneak a curse word or something in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's, there's got to be some hidden message somewhere, right?
Yeah, they might have been able to like find it in the edit bay and like kind of cut it out, use a different camera angle or something like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe like right before the scene, it was like, if anyone writes anything that is not, I will not quack at the principal, you're going to get banks. You're going to get kicked off the film, like the original banks.
Going to get banks.
Also, if you watch closely... most of them during Bombay's talk leaned up against the blackboard and erased a lot of their sentences. So I wonder if they had to go back and complete their sentences before they were let out of detention.
Oh,
I wonder also if that's more symbolism, because they're saying, I will not quack at the principal. It's kind of like, okay, we're not being ducks anymore. And then during his speech, they're leaning up against it and they're erasing it. So they're becoming ducks again.
Wow.
That wow. is pretty deep.
That
you
is...
know what, Tommy? That's probably what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is like advanced college English level deep, where you just pick up on little details and bullshit your way through papers. wow. Wow. I just need like another second to register that like philosophy we just had here. Okay. Let's get to it. Who is your MVP of the minute? Kevin, you can go first here.
Oh, man. I mean, the obvious choice is Bombay. I don't know. I have it paused at 65, 58, and Tommy Duncan looks pretty pathetic. so he's kind of inching up there for me. I think the eye roll was pretty strong from Goldberg.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, you know what? I'm going to throw him a bone. I'm going to go with Karp, because that was a pretty solid comeback whenever Bombay asked him that question.
Okay, fair enough. Tommy?
Yeah, I think Kevin's, I got to go with Bombay. I think it's, I like Karp. He gets like kind of supporting actor there, and Goldberg's eye roll is good. But I think it goes to Bombay. You know, he owned the scene, and it's he was well prepared for it.
Yeah, I'm gonna reluctantly give it to Bombay as well. Like, I honestly don't think that speech was all that like great, because he was just pushing stuff aside. But it did work, and he did carry the minute. Like, he kind of set the tone for everything else in there. So. I'll give it to Bombay as well, as I guess we all kind of said, honorable mention to Karp there with his comeback. Kevin.
Hold on a second. One thing I want to mention about this scene.
Okay.
There seems like every other kid is wearing a hat of some sort. And they're not just like a normal baseball cap.
Yeah.
It's all like weird shit.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know, like... And when I was in, you know, middle school, high school, it was just kind of like, not like a super strict, but it was like a no hats policy, whatever. And here, like,
yeah,
every kid.
We weren't allowed to wear hats.
Yeah. It's like every kid has a hat, and it's like a weird ass hat.
Yeah.
It's like Guy's got his weird thing, and like Charlie's wearing some like flannel thing on top of his head. And
yeah, Jesse's got a weird hat too.
Yeah. And like, you know, Terry's got a weird hat, and all the kids have some kind of like flair going on. I think Tammy's the only one who has like kind of like a normal outfit. She has like a nice green sweater and like, you know, pants or whatever. Everyone else has like some weird shit going on. And it'd be really, I know we spoke with the costume designer beforehand, but it's, I'd love to get her back on and talk about these hat choices.
Yeah, it's an especially interesting choice in detention. You figure they would be very strict, which I guess brings up a point I just thought about. Where is, like, the supervisor, where's the teacher at this point supervising these kids, make sure these kids write their mm-hmm. lines or whatever?
Maybe they come in every, like, 10 minutes just to check on them.
All right. All right. All right, Kevin, do you have the quack question?
I do. This week, our quack question comes from Danny, who is at DReisner12 on Twitter. And he kind of harkens back to our last episode. His question is, do you think after Gunnar left the soccer game, he got a DUI and was forced to coach a bad youth hockey team in Iceland?
Okay,
drawing the obvious parallel here.
Let's give a quick background.
Yeah.
Mike, can you do that?
Okay, so last episode, we basically connect the dots between the 1994 Iceland Junior Goodwill Games hockey team and the current 2016 Iceland Euro, what are they, quarterfinalists?
Yeah, quarterfinalists.
Yeah, so basically, Iceland had this golden age of hockey. They lost the Ducks. Ducks crumbled, or Iceland's hockey crumbled, but it kind of created this rise of soccer, which is now paying off 22 years later. And the thing we kind of talked about is Gunnar and Olaf and Wolf kind of looking at the success and thinking about what could have been in the hockey arena. So we came up with a kind of, we researched and figured out that Gunnar Stahl, he's had some troubles, but he went to an Iceland soccer game. He was honored at halftime. It's kind of like a reunion, like all the bad feelings go away. And now Danny has kind of extended the story to where Gunnar comes back from that soccer game where everything kind of comes full circle, gets a DUI, and now must coach a youth hockey team. At least that's his theory. Is that the case?
I mean, I think we probably all know where I stand on this. Of course that's what happened. But it might have to be a little, a step up from that. It's like maybe he was doing more than just drinking alcohol, you know, maybe he was hopped up on cocaine or something like that. Or maybe he robbed a bank or something, although I don't know why they would let a bank robber coach. And I don't know, maybe Iceland's just weird. But yeah, I definitely think it's like a step above that somehow.
Well, I think the it's obviously like a parallel to Bombay. And we don't know for a fact that Bombay wasn't doing coke.
It's true. He worked long hours.
You know what, Tommy? That's the smartest damn thing you've ever said.
Smarter than the chalkboard erasing bit?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I think what happens is Gunnar definitely gets a DUI. And he has to coach like a youth hockey team because they kind of recognize him. Maybe they're going to like throw him in the slammer. And then they have a second, like, hold on a second. This is like the Gunnar Stahl from that. He was like one of the greatest. He was the greatest youth hockey player in the world at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get to him. And what they probably do is they probably call Bombay and say, like, he gives Gunnar tips. And so this is kind of like a spinoff. From the original like plot. So if they're like, there's probably gonna be, you know, D4, D5, D6, but this will be like, you know, in the new Star Wars movies, they're doing like extended universe,
yeah,
that like take place in Star Wars, but it's not part of like the original like trilogy, yeah, and the prequels, whatever. And so this is like that, but there is gonna be a cameo of Bombay, like kind of like showing him a drill or like sending him an email, like, oh, you can do it. So I think this definitely happens, and this is probably a very successful miniseries.
So does Gunnar Stahl kind of turn this youth team around?
It would be pretty tough. Well, actually, no, it'd probably be really easy considering at that point, hockey is kind of just, is not a very big deal,
yeah,
at this point, I guess. So there wouldn't be a ton of competition, I guess.
Or maybe he's tasked with coaching like the youth, like the national team. And they're trying to get, like, you know, 25 years later, whatever, goes back to L.A. for the Junior Goodwill Games.
All right.
Okay. Now,
I like that.
I mean, does, how, I mean, This is either like a one-time thing, Gunner's team goes, they represent Iceland, but they don't do well, or do they go, do they win? Is this kind of the next rise of Iceland hockey here? Is this like a second golden age that Gunner is ushering in? Or does it all just kind of crumble here at the Junior Goodwill Games?
I think we could see the beginnings of a new era. As we kind of touched on in the last episode, Iceland is very cyclical when it comes to hockey and soccer. So I can totally see that happening.
I think they go to the Goodwill Games and they have like a respectable showing, similar to the like Icelandic soccer team at the Euros. And so it doesn't necessarily bring about like a new golden age, but it kind of raises the awareness. And so there's more kids playing hockey and it's more competitive. And so, and it doesn't necessarily push soccer out of the way, but then maybe Iceland realizes, hey, you know, maybe we should try to be good at two sports at once. So,
oh, that could be a devastating move then.
That's true. Their population isn't that big. Well, how about, well, maybe it's just like there's a nice little bump.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see it happening where they take just enough talent from soccer to kind of bring that team down, move the hockey team up a little bit, and then they're both kind of stuck in the middle here. But
well, isn't it like this is kind of a stretch, but bear with me. Okay. So like the 2002 U.S. soccer team did really well, and like it made it to the like quarterfinals of the World Cup, and that was like the best they had done since – like they kind of got a fluke third place finish in the 30s. And then isn't it in the 2004 Olympics? Is that when U.S. basketball like tanked and got third? Or was that 2008?
Oh, that's a good question.
Or no, 2008 was Beijing. So 2004 would have been Athens whenever they collapsed, right?
So yeah, so maybe something like that happened where like, and then the soccer, which was the national sport, like goes down. They're just like, what the hell happened? And just maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, so something to think about. Bring it back up. Wow. I mean, a lot of moving pieces here. I don't think we're going to have like a nice happy ending or really an ending at all because it's still developing in this world. I mean, unless you guys have like an ending that you have found in your research.
I do not.
Okay, yeah.
I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see in another 100 episodes or so.
Yeah.
We'll revisit this.
Yeah. we'll see how Iceland soccer does at the World Cup, and we'll see how they do at the Winter Olympics, both of which are in 2018.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff to keep an eye out for. I mean, if you have any info on Icelandic soccer or Iceland, or just want to get in contact with us, thequacktech.com, or on Twitter, @QuackTechPod, send us your hashtag quack questions. Use the hashtag Tommy's Got Something.
Make sure to let us know whose hat you like the most and whose hat you like the least out of that quack minute.
Yes. Yes. And as usual, you know, comb through that minute yourself and find the Easter eggs we have not found. Maybe you found something on the chalkboard that Kevin missed or something. Yeah. Facebook.com/QuackTechPod. Go to our store, thequacktech.threadless.com, or you can just go to thequacktech.com and click on the shop link. Either way, we'll get you there. Go to iTunes, give us 5 stars, write a review, review each and every hat in that Mighty Ducks minute, and remember, ducks fly together.
Ducks fly together.
Quack, quack.